Hey everybody, it's Charlie here. I just wanted to let you know that this is a bit of a quickie and it's kind of crazy because certainly I was whacked out on cold medicine and Pete, I guess he was just getting tired because he's old. Consiliums.
With Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Pete, in our last episode, did you want to do an intro?
No, I didn't. I was just going to go, and we're back.
You, last week, we talked about science translators, and the punchline of that episode was maybe science and the humanities are not two things. Maybe science is one of the humanities because it's a human endeavor.
Yeah.
Now,
That's a radical thing.
It was a fun little thing to land on, but let's try and unpack that in this one. What does that mean? What does that mean to say perhaps science is a human endeavor and so it should be under the humanities, right? What are we losing there and what are we gaining? If the humanities are the study and scholarship surrounding that study of human activities, right? Why do we then say science is separate? Because science is the study of natural activities.
Or actually, that's what we call it, right? I mean, when I was finishing my degree, visiting the Eidgenössische Technische Hochschule in Zurich, you get a Doktor von Naturwissenschaft, right? So natural sciences, that's what it is. It is the natural sciences.
Well, yeah, wasn't it natural philosophy at first?
It was natural philosophy, and you still get a doctorate in philosophy in those natural sciences at most places. I recently had to reorder my doctoral hood from MIT because I got stuck with the job of marching in the processional. It used to be that we only had to show up when we hooded a doctoral student.
What, a hood like a foreskin? I don't understand.
Yes, wait, cramp. Just got a leg cramp there. Age is a horrible thing. So, quick, call the paramedics. Actually, it looks much like a foreskin now that I think about it, but it kind of goes around your neck.
I'm glad that cramp gave you a moment to make sure that you were cool with that metaphor.
And what's funny is I did a summer at the Center
for, it was a simile. I apologize.
The Center for Materials Research at MIT when I was a junior. And there was a very wise doctoral student. Her name was Mary, who gave me a lot of good advice. And I was thinking of going to MIT for graduate school. And I said, well, what's the difference between a PhD and an SCD, right? And that's science doctorate, SCD. And she very wisely said, well, it depends. Do you look better in blue or yellow?
Jesus.
Because the standard color of a PhD. Oh, your mic's off, but mine's not. Okay, Charlie's going to empty his nasal passages. The standard color for...
Pete, part of why I turned my mic off is so that I could more discreetly handle my congestion.
This is part of the human condition. Why are we embarrassed by this? This is a natural thing.
Nice. Here's what I'm embarrassed by. I'm embarrassed by putting congestion sounds directly into the ears of our listeners.
I just turned my head.
Our
but in any case,
listeners.
The standard color on a doctoral hood, you have the school colors, and then the outline is always lined in blue velvet. Blue is that color.
Blue velvet?
A science doctorate.
You're kidding.
Yes, it is. Science doctorate. And they have them at MIT, and I think they have one at a few other schools. Carnegie Mellon, a few other places like that, is yellow. But in the old days, the Doctor of Philosophy had more requirements than the science doctorate. It had a language requirement, for example. So it was supposedly making you more a well-rounded person. And, you know, in the days of Newton, let's go all the way back there, this natural philosophy was a human thing. It was supposed to be relatable to normal people. I think it's just moved so fast and because has become so complex that there's a gap and it no longer is part of the human endeavor.
I don't know about that. Okay, so not taking the assumption as a given, not taking that maybe science and humanity should be mixed. Like, why is science, the entire realm of science, why is that not the humanities? Very simply.
I think it is.
But make the case that it's not.
Oh, now you're making me take the opposite position. Well, to what degree does the humanities include things that are not evidence-based and based on logic, right?
When did evidence-based become the watchword. When did that become the shibboleth to let people into science?
That is kind of one of the missions, that you're only allowed to make decisions, make claims based on evidence to support that.
Except we fetishize things like Eureka, you know, or the imagining of something and then the testing, you mm-hmm. know, like stuff.
Yeah, that is not how science really happens.
Is it not?
You're just muddling around going, I don't know what the hell's going on. And then you try something new and you find.
So why did you try something new, right? There's no evidence that, I mean, there's evidence that trying something new discovers things, but there's no evidence for that particular new thing, right? You're just trying to figure stuff
right,
out.
But at that point, you're simply postulating. You, right. you formulate a hypothesis, and the hypothesis has some reasonable basis in logic, but it isn't necessarily reasonable. Let's take, for example, a hot button issue right now. All the illegal aliens had voted, according to the Trump campaign. He claimed millions of illegal voters.
Oh, Jesus.
So, okay, but let's play devil's advocate. Say you hypothesize that. There are experiments that you can do to test. You can do ballot auditing. You can do ballot recounts. You can interview people in places where you think that occurred. You can, you know, start to probe that.
You can even examine the system and see what are the ways that someone right. who was here, an undocumented immigrant, how would right. they create a voter registration?
Right, but I think in business...
I don't think they can. I don't think you can register to vote if you're undocumented. Is that...
Oh, you can't, but you could if it were illegal, right? I mean, if you illegally did that, if you forged your
so
papers
this
or
is
something.
Full conspiracy. This is full-on yeah. conspiracy stuff.
Yeah, this has to be a very large sort of thing. If
I tell you, once someone's happen. Actually forged their citizenship document, I mean, shouldn't we just let them in?
It's just, is that know, like
if you're that good
like
to make convincing documents,
work, you know, now
you're in
because now you're a citizen, right? Yeah. I mean, the whole point of it being a problem that they're undocumented is not because they're here and they didn't right. go through the process. It's that they didn't go through the process. So they don't have, you know, Social Security number and they're not paying taxes and they're right. not you know, like, you know, they're not in the census and all that.
Right.
I mean, if we could just say, pow, they're citizens and they're in the system.
Right.
That would be better.
Wouldn't
I'm going to leave
it?
That for another day. Basically, you're saying if you're clever enough to trick the federal government, you belong in the country.
I'm saying that if you can trick the federal government into taking you on as a citizen, mm-hmm. then you're a citizen. That's the whole point. Like, tricking the government into taking you as a citizen is the whole point.
Oh, that is the whole point. Right. We have a process for doing
that.
Yeah,
we right? test them. And then if you trick yeah. them, you trick them because you've put your hand
you
up.
You wrote the answers about the Bill of Rights on your hand.
This is not the point of this episode, of course, but I will right. say that, like, I mean, I think that I would have a hard time with a citizenship test now.
That is a common joke that many of my colleagues like
yeah,
to tell.
I mean, but, yeah. like, I get the whole picture. I understand.
Can you pronounce the name of the clause that prevents the president from taking gifts or benefits from foreign governments?
You know, when I say
can't.
It, when I say it, it sounds like
emollient.
But it sounds.
But it's
when
not.
I say
there's
it,
no
it sounds
e.
Like,
emollient isn't emollient. That's a moisturizer for
e.
your skin.
Is there not an e?
I thought it was just an m. We don't even know.
Well,
this
look,
is how ignorant we are.
It shouldn't happen. That's the clause. Like that's right. crazy that someone would
I
own
just
a business
to it as
and be president.
That clause.
That clause. The same. Santa Claus.
But actually, it doesn't prohibit him from business dealings in this country. It specifically refers to foreign governments.
Oh, yeah, but like in general. Like, you know, the president...
It is morally wrong.
The president should also not... The president should not also have a f***ing mechanics garage, you know, on the street corner. You know? It's just like, it shouldn't be running... I'm the president, and also I have a thriving mail order business. Like, that's just wrong. Mm. Just don't do that.
Yeah, but I think the president can sell
maybe,
that business
maybe
and
it's,
get
yeah, totally,
economic
totally, yes,
benefit
yes.
and then invest that
but not when he,
in
not,
separate
not
blind
when
trust
he
investments.
Or she is president yeah. before yeah. they become president.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe an Etsy shop is okay. Like, if the president is actually...
Or a Pinterest page.
Well, Pinterest page
doesn't
sell.
Where do you draw the line?
But, like, you know, if the president's a knitter...
Yeah.
Maybe that's okay.
Okay.
Right? Wouldn't you love to have a hat knitted by the president, whoever it might be, whomever it might be?
That would fetch a pretty penny, I think. And the fact that I said pretty penny means we need to wrap up, so I'm losing it.
So the point is evidence-based, right? That's a phrase now. That's a phrase everywhere. But I think 5 years ago, people didn't say that.
Scientists said it, I believe, 200 years ago.
Oh, yeah. That's the phrase. That's always been the phrase.
It's always been our thing. The issue is that there are many things in humanities that don't need evidence.
I know people said based on evidence, or people said we need evidence. Yes. I know that evidence was a phrase. It was a thing that people said. I'm saying the evidence-based community, that kind of thing. I don't know when that arrived as a label, a self-identifier.
So
did it come along with Asperger's? Is that
Asperger's? No, it does not. And no, that is an insult.
When people started
many
saying,
of my colleagues
"I'm a self-diagnosed
sufferer
of Asperger's,"
I think the conflict comes in the fact that much of the humanities needs no evidence to be the humanities, and I will go back to Carl Sagan's Contact.
You're so full of shit.
Do you remember the point in the? Do you remember the point in the movie where
they should have sent a poet? I know it's your
favorite not even part. That one. Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey were talking about Occam's Razor, and she was explaining the principles of Occam's Razor that usually the simplest explanation is the most reasonable. And then he said, okay.
Most reasonable or most likely?
Most likely. And he said, do you love your father? She said, yes, prove it. Much of the humanities deals with love and laughter and poetry and the transcendent emotional and metaphysical experience.
Here's the problem with that.
From art. I don't need any evidence.
No, it's bullshit. Here's the problem
with
that.
If Beethoven's Sixth Symphony brings me to heights I otherwise would not reach emotionally, that's good enough for me.
If there is a system, if there's a metric or a rubric to define love, then you can prove it, right? That's easy. And people have talked about what love means. So you build a rubric, and then you can prove that people love or don't love based on your definition of love.
Okay.
Right?
But love is not logical. I will attest to that.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if it's logical or not.
Okay.
Because if the rubric is talks to them and feels good after and, enjoys their company, misses them when they're not there, goes to their home and takes gifts or whatever, if there's a rubric like that, you can come up with ways that love is demonstrated, right? And you can check them off. Do you love this person? It's easy to say, do I love you, Pete? Right?
I'm waiting.
And the rubric is...
Of course you do. I'm delightful.
I like you because you're delightful. Okay. I enjoy your company, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't love you.
I'm a little hurt by that.
No, you're not. Because you know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Right?
I can live with that.
If you say, prove you love someone with the assumption that it's impossible,
yes,
which is what that dickhead that Matthew McConaughey was playing was doing.
Oh, I liked his character.
But that's what I'm saying is that question is crapola, right? Because what he's saying is, hey, prove a thing that doesn't exist. That's what his question is. Whereas love does exist. It's a collection of behaviors that we've put a label on.
Okay, so you could look at her behavior over the years toward her father and judge that based by a rubric. I will say this. It won't be quite as quantitative as the science guys are. It may be semi-qualitative.
I don't know. I mean, look.
And I can live with that.
How much data do you have about... when Galileo was making the guesses at the orbits, right, was that... science still? Did he prove?
Well, a lot of science involves hypotheses.
Right.
That are very, let's use the technical term, loosey-goosey at the beginning. And our model of the atmosphere is still kind of loosey-goosey.
Compared to what he was trying to get at, he had very little, quantitative evidence, right? He had
when
basically
you start at the beginning, it's very qualitative at the beginning. Yeah.
And so is love.
Okay. But what's the point you're trying to make here?
My point is that your stuff about Contact and Matthew McConaughey saying, prove that you love your father, is not an argument that humans and human condition and human emotion and behavior is unscientific or is incapable of being scientifically measured or understood. Right.
But let's take both the humanities and the science fusion
What did you just say?
Fusion. Like Sarah Palin, I just invented a new word. About my new hobby of motorcycle riding. If I use logic, the risk of doing that for pure transportation is just not justified, right? There are too many crazy people out there. You're too likely to get hurt, injured, killed. It's just ridiculous, right? Uh-huh. If I use logic, and I could put this on a spreadsheet.
Logic meaning the percentages.
Yeah, exactly. That it's simply not worth the risk. But the humanities part of me says,
but wait,
I like being out there in the open, experiencing the world.
Yeah, have you quantified your enjoyment? That's really the thing.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
See, and so
I think it reduces my stress. It makes me a happier person.
Do you remember the very first episode, or maybe two or three episodes in, the plaid bunny thing?
Yeah.
Right? Irrationality is one thing, but rational choices are another, right? So yeah. If you have an irrational delight in something, yes. It is then rational to say, I want that delight despite the risk.
I could answer questions about how I feel when I ride on a 7-point Likert, and it is Likert, not Likert. They never say Likert because it sounds dirty. This is the, you know,
yeah.
Absolutely not and absolutely true scale where you judge
that hurts a little. Can't
yeah,
stand
that's
it.
Exactly
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
you know,
the
how do
way,
you
yeah.
do? You feel great when you ride your motorcycle? Completely disagree. Completely agree. And then in the middle, it's like so-so.
So see your logic, your question about, or your premise.
I feel better
that logically motorcycle riding is not okay. Is not. It's that's not the end of it, right? Mm. If you do the percentage, what are the? Can we make
if
up some percentages?
If I include my enjoyment in the objective
yeah.
function,
there's 100% chance that you'll have some sort of crash.
Yeah.
Right. As you head out.
Pretty much.
You know, timeline. Right.
Yeah.
What are the chances of that crash being fatal? What are the chances of that crash being disabling? What are the chances of that crash being...
So you're right. I'm very logical. Right? I try to eliminate, you know, the truly fatal one where you're right. going to get squished by a semi, which might kill you in a car, too.
Yeah.
I try to eliminate... I can't eliminate those, but I can eliminate...
You multiply cost
the
by the probability. You multiply benefit by
yeah,
the probability,
the DOT
right?
approved helmet, the ballistic nylon motorcycle
There's
jacket.
There's a 100%
the
chance...
The boots that are reinforced in the heel and the toe.
That if you go on a motorcycle ride, that you will get that enjoyment of whatever that
oh,
essence.
There is a 100% chance.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe 99 because what if you have a bad day? But even
yeah.
that,
it's,
the
it's,
joy
it's
of being on a motorcycle,
least, yeah.
whatever it is, right, is quantifiable,
okay.
right? Like how, here's a good one, right? If you're depressed, then the chance of death is really not a cost. It's sort of, I could take it either way.
So you're using the same logic I use to occasionally buy a Powerball lottery ticket.
Maybe, but yeah. I don't think so. I'm saying that if you, like, okay, there's a 20% chance every time you do this that you will get hurt about the level of a pinch, okay?
Okay.
And there's a 100% chance that you will feel better for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Right? So.
You're taking all the mystery out of the humanities for me.
You've ruined it. I'm not taking anything out of the humanities, right?
Okay. All right, you win. Uncle.
Really? Okay.
Science and humanities are maybe two sides to the same coin.
And let me finish with a Sarah Palin thing.
Okay.
Because I want to say this. I've been wanting to say this to someone for a long time. Sarah Palin's sort of lunatic language and word making up that she does,
yeah.
right? Her coinage.
Right.
Right. If you actually read the transcripts of Sarah Palin's supposedly nonsensical, right? What do you even call them, rants or transcripts or free association? There is a logic to everything that Sarah Palin says. It's all in there. It's poetry, right? I mean, it's for me, it's kind of lunatic poetry.
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah Palin is actually much more understandable than people say
because
they have not examined the logic within her crazy talk, right?
Right.
It's the same with, like, love or the same with, you know, why do people smoke or why do people, you know, because, like, why do people smoke?
Yeah.
Well, because it's addictive. And
yeah,
so
she's
you
a
keep
defending
smoking it.
A point I don't agree with, but she does do it with a reasonably engaging narrative.
But even more so, when you read some of those, like.
That's why she was so popular.
Those circular things where she says, I can't recreate them. But people say, when people call it word salad, right, because they haven't actually taken a little bit of time to get into what she kind of has this modernist sort of James Joycean way of doing associations within associations and then not curling back. I mean, she's a bad writer.
So it's not a complete tautology, but it's just a little confusing.
You love tautology. She's a bad writer when she speaks.
I put it on my salads wherever I go.
But she's not an incoherent writer.
Yeah. What's the point of that?
I just like to every once in a while say, no, Sarah Palin, she's crazy, but she makes crazy sense.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's okay to make up a word. Isn't that how we get new words?
No, Shakespeare writes them. Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
What happened to the unity of knowledge, dude?
That's at the beginning. This is at the end.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for listening to Consilience with Pete and Charlie. You can find us on Facebook. You can like our page, share our episode announcements. Follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Tumblr, too. Pete and Charlie, we're all over the internet.
And what does the Georgia Institute of Technology and WRIK Atlanta think of the content of Consilience?
Hopefully, they'll never find out.